Hey guys, it's Drew here, and one of my favorite episodes, I want you to watch or listen to this podcast here, as we're talking with Dean Graziosi, and I'm shooting this in Dean's house, and this episode took us about 6 hours to shoot here. We got it boiled down to about an hour here, but it's me and Dean Graziosi talking about how to create wealth, how to keep wealth, and how to protect wealth. If you're interested in how to make money, I want you to listen to this podcast here on the Money Is Podcast. Everybody, this is Drew, and I got G and Adam in the back here. I got my driver right here driving me around, and we just got done shooting with Dean Graziosi at his house, and it was absolutely...
What if all that was designed for you right now, as hard as it seems, because it's building some kind of muscle, it's building some kind of resourcefulness. It's allowing you to overcome an obstacle that you learn so much from that you can carry it forward.
My mind's trying to comprehend all the stuff that we went through. So much freaking knowledge, so much fun that we had. I got to ask him some awesome questions about creating wealth. When I stop and think about, I was thinking about this morning about the interview and the conversation, and the amount of people's lives that you have changed is getting into the overwhelming amount. This is where you got to take 1,000 and get one.
Yeah, exactly.
Appreciate it, man. Love it, man. Thank you so much. Hey guys, this is Andrew, and I'm here on set with at Dean Graziosi's house. And we're going to talk about moneyis.com. We're going to talk about this TV series called Famously Generous. And on this TV series, we're going to talk about three topics that I always think of that wealthy people do when they create money, which is number one, they create it. Number two, they keep it. And number three, they know how to protect it. In your life, when it comes to creating money, how do you know those three things right there? We're going to talk about Dean Graziosi, how he looks at those three components of creating it, keeping it, and protecting it on Money Movement at moneyis.com. And we're here at Dean Graziosi's house, which is off the charts badass. This is Andrew, and today is one of those special days in my life where there's certain days in life that you get to naturally stay up late and wake up early, and for me, this is one of those days. I'm actually sitting in the house of one of my favorite mentors and friends, and his name is Dean Graziosi, and this is the in my world, this is the man, the myth, the legend. Just launched an incredible webinar with Tony Robbins. This is the guy that makes me wake up early in the morning just to think about what all he's accomplished in life. On this little conversation, we're going to talk to Dean, and we're going to talk about some of those powerful things about creating wealth and money that's out there. Dean, it is absolutely my privilege, my honor to have you here, bro. You have changed. When I stop and think about, I was thinking about this morning about the interview and the conversation, and the amount of people's lives that you have changed is getting into the overwhelming amount. You know what I mean? Like, you've been at this for decades now,
yeah,
of just helping people. Whatever it was, and I've watched you from like the beginning, probably like a stalker in the background, but man, you have like revolutionized. Sometimes I think about this morning, and this is the best definition I came up with you. You're kind of like, in my mind, the Lewis and Clark of this industry.
Oh,
like you paved the path. There was no
people
path.
People don't see all the miserable failures, but luckily I fail really fast.
Man, it's crazy to watch all that you've done in such a short amount of time. But in this interview, we're going to talk about a couple of things here. And one of the things I'd just like to get going is get to know you a little bit on a personal level for those that are watching, to get to know you. Some obviously know you in great detail. Some are maybe the first time they're seeing you. So a couple get to know you questions that we go through here. Number one, where were you born?
Yeah. Before we start, though, I want to anchor, if you're watching this right now, I don't like doing interviews that don't have a purpose. this.
Sure.
So the only reason I wanted to do this with you today, man, I know what you do. You're amazing at your heart to give, your heart to serve. I'm glad that you get to impact some people who found you through me.
Like, yeah.
It's really awesome, and I wouldn't take this interview if you didn't have that heart to serve.
Thank you.
So I'm really happy that you're here. You're watching right now. I know time is busy. We all have limited time. We all have way too many distractions. So know, if you're going to spend a little time with us right now, I want to deliver you value. If you're someone that wants to go to another level, just tap into your full potential, find a new way to generate income, but not someone who's looking for a magical money machine. I promise I'm not going to share some magical way to get rich overnight. If that's what you're looking for, that's not me. There's lots of those people online. So I just want to say, if you're here right now and you desire more, spend the time with us, because in my life, I've moved the needle the most by learning from other people who've already been there. Learning from your own trial and error is the most miserable, ridiculous way to achieve, even though that's kind of how we're taught to learn. So hopefully today we deliver at least one thing. Listen and throw the rest away, but take one thing and implement it in your life. And that's my goal for you today. So don't miss a moment.
Love it.
All right, now
thank you, man.
Want.
Thank you, Dean. All right, really quick here. Get to know you. Where were you born?
I was born in Poughkeepsie, New York, but that's what the hospital was actually. Marlboro, New York.
Marlboro, New York was where you were born. What was your very first job when Dean got started in high school, maybe? Or
no,
way before high school.
So I always worked with my dad at his collision shop.
Right.
I mean, when I was 5 years old, I was there sanding fenders. He's got a picture of me seven welding. You know, like I did Bondo. I painted cars by the time I was 10. I rehabbed my first car when I was 11.
Yeah.
My dad bought an old beat up car. Said I wanted a BMX bike.
Yes.
And he said, we didn't have any money back then. He's like, I can't. And I wanted a Hutch. I'm dating myself, but it's when BMX was really cool.
Right.
And this Hutch was like a lightweight silver bike. And kids that had money in my town had it. He's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I don't have money for a Huffy. You want a Hutch?
The best of the best.
Yeah, right. So anyway, long story short, he lent me the money. He bought an old Ford Capri wrecked car. And I was probably 11 or 12. I know it sounds young, but I really wasn't. I went there every day after school for like 6 months, and I rebuilt the car and sold it. Made like $400.
You flipped the car when you were 12?
12 or 13.
12 years old, flipped your car.
I flipped it.
And then
I used that money. I bought my Hutch. I had the nicest bike in town. We lived in the crappiest house. My dad's pickup truck was so beat up, I wouldn't even let him drop me off at school. And
yeah.
I had like a $600 bicycle.
That's
made
great,
zero
man.
Sense, but
your very first job. That's awesome, man. Flipped a car at 12 years old. That's that entrepreneur. I always say sometimes people have a true entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And you're almost born with it. Where it's your natural instinct to go do something, man. Love it. Different topic here. What's your favorite, if you have one, because I know you're a very, very healthy person, but if you were to eat one, what's your favorite candy bar?
Candy. I haven't eaten candy bars in years.
In 20 years, right?
Yeah, but I would say currently I love, if I'm going to eat an energy, it's not a candy bar.
All right, what's the energy? Health bar.
The vanilla one from Bulletproof. But as a kid, I loved Kit Kats.
Kit Kats. Yeah. That was your candy bar?
If you put
them
in the freezer,
that was your jam, right? The frozen Kit Kat.
Frozen Kit Kat.
That's interesting, man. I'm going to ask you two here. What I know you've written some incredible books. Your newest book, Millionaire Success Habits, crushing it. You just did a new edition of the book as well, which we love. There were some few gifts that I think you gave as well.
Yeah.
But on the, I'm going to ask you two. Number one is, what's your favorite book you've ever read? And then what is your favorite book that you've ever written? Because you've written some.
Millionaire Success Habits, the second answer is my favorite.
That's your favorite.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love that book because I poured my heart into it and people are feeling it. Yeah. And the impact got wider. People used to look at me as just the real estate guy.
Right.
I'm really always been a success guy who got successful from real estate.
Right.
But if you don't go off shooting and have the right habits, you know that.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And none of it works. You can have a business on how to sell $20 bills for $10. You know the right mindset, you screw it up.
Yep.
Yeah, my mom said it wouldn't work. Like, oh my God.
Mindset is everything
right?
in business.
So Millionaire Success Habits is my favorite. As far as books go, man, my favorite book is usually the book I just got done reading.
Yeah.
Right? So I just got done listening to a 42-hour book on George Washington's
life. Wow.
Longest book I ever listened to.
Wow.
Personal growth extreme. Like, talk about the underdog. Like, we all feel like underdogs. I'm sure you're watching right now. You know, maybe your family doesn't support you. You don't have money. You live in the wrong area. Something. We all have an underdog.
Right.
We feel is a disadvantage, which I'm kind of teasing about my next book. But people who transcend realize that being an underdog is actually your advantage when you can use the power of people telling you you can't, the power of having money so you become resourceful, the power of not caring if you fail because you got nothing to lose.
Right.
All those things actually give the underdog a leg up and an advantage, just most people don't realize it. So reading that book on George Washington, he was the quintessential underdog. So I would say that was my favorite because it's the last one I read. But also, outside, I read personal growth books nonstop. I listen to them every single day, so I'm always going through them. Untethered Souls, amazing book. But outside of that, The Shack. The Shack made a massive impact on me. Whether you're spiritual, religious, or don't believe in anything, The Shack's really strong.
Interesting. I love getting to know you here. Here's a different for you. Do you have any hidden talent that someone would not know about?
Hidden talent. I can juggle.
You can juggle?
I can juggle.
I learned to juggle when I was like 7 years or maybe 8 years old.
Yeah, I beat up all my mom's grandmother's fruit. I used to juggle their fruit. Yeah, like, you're trying to juggle again.
And I used to go to the grocery store when I was a kid, was shopping with my mom. And I would just go there and grab the oranges and apples. And I would start it there and they would drop and I'd put them back in the shelf or whatever. Very good. Hidden talents. Next one, do you collect anything?
No.
No collectible, nothing like that. I was going to ask you about golf, but then I saw in your interview with Tony or your KBB with Tony, you said you only golf twice a year, and it's basically with Tony. And I loved it because you said it's my favorite time to golf because he only plays certain holes.
He only plays the holes he likes.
It's freaking
like
awesome.
We
it's
golfed,
awesome.
He's like, oh, that one's got water. Let's go to that one.
And the funny thing is,
the cool part is pull up with Tony especially.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
I feel blessed people recognize me, but it's Tony.
Right.
Right? He's like just
bigger than life.
So when you walk up, even someone's on the hole, like, oh, please, you guys play it. So there's never.
No way. No lag time.
No, never.
That's awesome. That's a great way to play golf as well. Do you have a favorite sports team?
No.
No sports team. And then last question here. Let me do two more with you. What's your favorite holiday?
Probably Christmas.
Christmas. Yeah. And that leads to the last question there. Favorite Christmas movie?
Easiest question of all. It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Watch it every year. The black and white version of it. Yeah, black and white, and then they have the new color version.
Yeah. Awesome.
Cry every year like I've never seen.
Awesome. Love to get to know you here. Look, in the room here, we talk a lot about money, and we talk about wealth and real estate and how to use it, right? And I really talk a lot about what I call the five M's of money and wealth, which is be the making of it, the movement of it, the metrics of it, the mission of it, and a measurement of it. And inside of that, when I look at your life, man, I see studying you, the word movement pops out to me the most. Because I feel like in these 20 years, you have accomplished so much with moving constantly and moving the game of money. And a lot of times with money, if you don't move it, it tends to die.
Yep.
It tends to go away, right? And sometimes we begin to hoard the money versus actually just moving it and investing it. In that movement, I want to talk to you and get your advice on 3 points here. Creating it, keeping it, and protecting it,
okay.
Right? When we talk about creating money, right, creating wealth and creating money, what you've created so much in different businesses as well, and different opportunities, when you think of creating wealth, what comes to your mind to talk about creating wealth and the movement of money inside of it there?
So my brain, like I have all these different categories. Like
yeah.
As you ask this, I'm listening to you, and I could go down like five different roads.
Okay.
But the one thing I want to do is I want to talk about some misconceptions.
Okay.
Some misconceptions that I remember what it was like. And I think I do so well connecting with people. At least I hope I do. It's because I never forget what it's like to be broke. I'm still a broke kid on the inside.
Yeah.
I mean it. I'm still afraid that someday I'll wake up and all this will be gone. That I'll be struggling again. That my mom worked two jobs to make 90 bucks a week and I never saw her because she worked this much. Like all those live inside me. I get goosebumps talking about it because I never want to forget that. Because I know what it's like if you're watching right now that you've maybe tried other opportunities in the past. You were almost there, but life gobbled you back up and you missed an opportunity. Or maybe you went down the path and you invested in somebody and they didn't deliver the value they promised. Like, there's a million different stories of what happens. And I remember the way I felt looking at other people that got successful. And sometimes I was even envious. Did you ever see somebody when you were broke and you're like, man, I'm working just as hard as this dude?
Yep.
Why the hell is he making it? And I'm not, right? So sometimes it's envy. Sometimes you're excited for the other person, but still it's like, why the hell am I being missed out on? But then I think there's this misconception, especially in today's world because of, and I know I'm a little bit all over the place.
No, you run with it.
But reel me back in. But as a kid, we didn't have YouTube or Facebook or Instagram. Like if I looked at somebody successful, it was had to be someone in my town or just what I saw on TV.
Right.
I couldn't go on YouTube and find influencers or somebody doing well, right? But what I think has happened with seeing so many people online is three things I want to cover.
Okay.
Is we see wealth and abundance and it looks like it comes too easy. Okay. And what I believe is Just like, you know, somebody takes a picture of themselves on Instagram. I don't know if you guys put pictures on Instagram. Sure. You take 10, you pick the best one, and they filter the best one. Yeah. It's the same way. You see somebody with the Lambo and the watch, and they're doing great. You don't realize that maybe they just made it, and they can't even cover the payments on that Lambo. Or they're living in a rented house. I own this one, right? Like, so we sometimes see that and go, man, that guy's 22, killing it. What's wrong with my life? And it actually does the opposite of inspiration. It makes you go, man, I could never get there. I'm 44 now. This kid's 22. Screw it. I'm going to go back to work. So that's one thing I want you, that's BS. Like, just know being successful and making more money takes more work than most people realize.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, is it worth it? Absolutely. And secondly, I just want to share that when I tried to figure it out on my own in my 20s, because I didn't know there was people that could mentor me, guide me, masterminds, groups, trainings, books. I'm an obsessive learner now. I pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for my education. Still, I attend, I run high-level masterminds. Tony and I are launching a $250,000 a year mastermind, but I still spend 50 grand a year to go to other people's masterminds. Like, oh my God, I wish someone would have shaken me. That's why Tony and I are on this mission to make self-education the new norm. I wish someone shook me in my 20s and said, what the hell are you trying to figure this out on your own? Somebody's already done it.
Yep.
Just go figure it out.
Already figured it out,
Right? So again, I'm digressing. Know that you have to do more work than you think. Secondly, though, in today's world, you're open to training and learning and materials that can allow you to go faster. You don't have to learn on your own. So trial and error is dumb. So first thing is measure your life based on you. Where are you now? And make progress. That's all you can do is look backwards. And when you look back, as long as you're moving up the ladder, as long as you're moving forward, you're doing better than the people next to you. Don't compare yourself. And if you watch other people, like you watch me or you watch you or you watch anybody, use it as inspiration. And if it's making you feel resentment or like you'll never get there, then figure out another way to be motivated. Secondly, be obsessive of learning from other people. And then third, it's kind of like a blanket of stuff. And then let's get to the question you actually asked. I want to get these out of the way. Is people think when it comes to, like, and I still have friends. I'm 50 this year. I still have friends. I went back to New York 2 weeks ago. It's all my old buddies.
Yeah.
And a lot of them have the same thing. It's like, man, I got this idea, but I just got to get, when it comes to creating, it's like, man, if I can get somebody to fund my idea, I can rock it. Like, that's just this crap-ass misconception that I don't ever want anybody funding my deals because I did it when I was a kid. And you're obligated to them. You're burning someone else's money so it's easier to spend. It's like in today's world with technology, learning from other people, especially in the real estate game when it comes to things like wholesaling, I don't even want anybody else's money because if you can make it work without money, here's the again, I know I can go down a lot of channels, but you don't need someone else's money. In most cases, if you gave the wrong person $1 million, and you gave someone else just resourcefulness, the resourcefulness will outdo the person with $1 million. If you can't make it without it, you can't make it with it.
Yeah.
So what I realized when it comes to money and manufacturing it and creating it, when I look back at my 30 plus years of being an entrepreneur, it wasn't, and I want you to hear this, because I know it was all over the place, it wasn't because I had resources. My parents had nothing. Nothing. I support both of my parents. I retired both of them. I buy them their cars. I pay their health insurance. I have their life insurance. I send them a check every week. Nobody in my family had money. I didn't go to college. I'm not saying, oh, look at me, I'm great. I'm just saying I didn't have resources. But no one taught me that that's not what you need. What you need is resourcefulness.
Right.
Right? So when it comes to manufacturing or generating new money, it's not about having someone lend you money or finding the invention or inventing the new Facebook. It's about being resourceful and gaining capability from someone who's already done it and not letting other people be successful rob your hunger to get it. I hope that tied together well, but
I love it.
But without that, I don't care. Listen, real estate transformed my life in my 20s. If it wasn't for real estate, I have the deepest like gratitude towards real estate because I don't know if I would have stayed fixing cars or went to work for someone else. Like I got in real estate and I was able to transform my life. I was able to become a millionaire in my 20s, which no one would have ever friggin' believed. My guidance counselor would have flown over dead, right? I owe the biggest debt of gratitude to real estate. Yeah. I want to talk more about it, but I'm doing everybody watching a disservice if I say it's just real estate.
Right.
Because if you have the greatest training in the world, you give them the greatest training in the world, but they're not resourceful, it's not going to work. You give them the greatest training in the world and they don't actually go through the training or follow what you say, meaning self-education, learn from the people. It's never going to work. If you're watching other people that are rich and you keep going, oh, I want to be a millionaire in 15 minutes, you're going to get discouraged and you're going to quit. So I don't care if you give the most magical training, which you do, but if you don't have those three things and a bunch of other stuff, then it just never works. So let's get back to your question.
Well, can we, if you're okay, stay on that topic just for a second?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you brought up a point that I think is so real and so authentic inside the classrooms and teaching today, is that there is this misconception of what it takes to create wealth. And I call it the metric side, right, of the money there. Meaning that, first of all, it's okay when you see someone way up here. And I'll use you to me as an example. I look at you as way up here. But I don't use that as a, what you're talking about. You don't use that as a ploy to make me jealous. It's there to provide inspiration and grow.
To where you can go.
And but with social media that came out, there's so many, I don't want to use the negative term of fake people or whatever the word, whatever. I'm not trying to, but there's this fake idea or concept that so many people show up to thinking that, oh, I could just push these buttons right here and I'll magically now become here.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, and the other thing too is, like, what I want to share with everybody, I'm not poo-pooing on success. I would take zero rounds. I've failed miserably. I've lost my money twice. I've had sleepless nights. I had a bleeding ulcer before. I've messed up relationships because of business. Like, I've failed miserably. But I would take one bit of it back.
Wow.
Not one bit of it. Like, my whole life now, what success means to me is I get to be a dad. Like, I
heard you a while ago. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting married in 2 weeks, the love of my life. My kids are thriving. Like, all of that I did gives me the freedom that on summer vacation. The reason you're in my home and not at my studio is because my kids are with me today. I'm not going to my studio. I want them upstairs. I want them with me, right? Like, that's the freedom. And what I would, and let's get to the money thing, but the gift I wish I could give all of you is figure out what real success, not just the car, because we all think the car, the money, and I'm not saying don't get all that. I live in an amazing house. I have a nice car. But when you really understand what success means, then that fight to gain the capabilities, to let people make it more than you, inspire you, not make you envious, to be courageous, to go after it no matter what, to find the resources and be resourceful at, like, even when I hire people, we'll give them a problem.
Yeah.
And we see how many times they'll try to fix it before they go, oh, it's not working. Some people literally go, I tried that, it's not working, it's broken. Some other people go, I tried this and this, and it's not working. Other people come back and say, I tried this, I tried this, then I tried this, then I went and Googled it, I found that, and I fixed it.
Yeah. It's
like, you're hired.
Right.
Because they're resourceful.
Resourceful.
Right? So figure out what success, real success, means, and then how do you reverse engineer it to find the ability to be resourceful and gain resources by learning from other people, to watch what you do, what other people do, and be like, damn it, if he could do it, I got this.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you go into it completely different than the person next to you. You could be sitting in a room right now, and both of you say, I'm getting engaged in next level self-education. I'm going to learn how to crush it in real estate. And man, no matter what it takes, I'm going to get my first deal. No matter what it takes, I'm going to watch Dean and Tony and all these people, everybody, and I'm going to use that as inspiration, and I'm going to keep learning and growing. And the person right next to him would go, I'm going to get this too because I want to be rich, but if this shit doesn't work in the first month, I'm going to be pissed.
Yep.
Who do you think is going to be successful? And both of them at the end, one's going, oh my God, this is amazing. And one's going, ah, that crap didn't work. I got to find something else. And that's the person who goes on to opportunity after opportunity. They look back at 90 years old. They tried 60 different things and it's everybody else's fault.
Mm.
Right? So why do you think I write books? I mean, real estate's my life and you know, real estate changed my life. But why do you think I wrote a book called Millionaire Success Habits? Because without the right habits, without the right foundation, we can give them the business to sell $20 bills for 10 bucks. And in 2 years, they're looking for the next business that sells $20 bills for 10 bucks, right?
Love it.
All right, let's get back to your stuff.
Well, you brought up a point. You brought up OPM. And you made a crazy statement a while ago that I'd like you to expand upon if you can. Because I see it so much that people say, that what you talked about your friend that said, if I had this funding, get somewhere to fund me. And it seems like that's always like almost the first hurdle that people come up with, especially in real estate, is I know how to do everything about real estate. I just need the funding to do it or whatever. And there's OPM, and it sounds like you're super passionate right now about OPE, meaning other learning from other people's experiences, is what you're talking about, being resourcefulness and understanding how to learn and educate yourself. Out of those two, which one in your career looking back has been the most, I think I know the answer to this, but the most beneficial, most powerful for you? OPM? Because you have some multi-million dollar businesses, but or OPE?
It's not even a comparison.
Yeah.
But I want to tell you something. It doesn't mean that you might even be questioning me. You're watching me right now saying, yeah, because you got money now.
Right.
Of course it's other people's experience. Duh. Because I remember being in my 20s thinking, man, if someone just lend me money, I could go so much faster.
Right.
But here's what I realized. It doesn't. I'm reading a book right now called Rework. Killer book. Just started about 45 minutes in. It said the curse of today's world is everybody is trying to do a startup and raise money. And you raise money. You know what happens as soon as you raise money? You answer to other people. Your passion that you want to go for has to be altered in their direction. You owe the money back. And when you spend other people's money, you spend it faster. Why do you think casinos don't have you spend cash? They give you chips. It's like, oh, it's just another chip.
Right.
If you had to pull a $100 bill out every time.
Every time I ever hand.
It'd be a completely different story,
yep.
Right? So here's, I mean, just give an experience for being a broke human being and an entrepreneur for 30 years. Obsess on other people's experience. Now, if you can get money along the way, great. As long as it's structured right. As long as you know the terms right. As long as you know the deal and say, I can borrow this hard money and pay all this money back and still net 20 grand. Great. But obsess on the experience, because let me just ask you right now. If I said, you said you want to be successful, I gave you $1 million right now to do your thing. Do you really think you have the experience to manage $1 million and make it successful? In most places, no.
Right.
I've watched successful businesses raise millions and they fail over and over because they're obsessed on OPM rather than obsessing on the experience.
Yeah. Great points, man. I love the OPM versus the OP because so much of people always wanted to rely heavy on that OPM side of it. Where I think if they knew how to actually structure the deal and know more about the deal itself, meaning have educated themselves about the deal, it's amazing. I always hear people say that no great deal ever goes unfunded.
Yeah, of course. No. And I want to tell you something. When it comes to fix and flips, right?
Yeah.
I remember this. I can remember the transition. If you're bringing me back to my real estate day, okay? I knew you were going to get here. I can remember the transition of wanting to raise money or have people lend me money so I could do all these deals.
Sure.
I'm in my 20s. I see all this opportunity. I'm going as fast as I can. I got 80 grand out of my credit cards. They're maxed out. I'm doing deals off of credit cards. And I want more money to come in. And I remember being hungry wanting that money. Like, man, I'm doing this deal. Come on, can you lend me the money? And I remember every time I asked that way, people are like, you know, I had to think about this. Let me stop by and see what you're doing. And like, I felt like I was chasing them. I'm like, people don't want to lend me money. And then one day I'm like, I'm sick of this. I'm not asking people for a dime. I will figure this out. And then I got obsessed with no money down deals. And I knocked on a million doors. And I got people to sell me properties. I found people in my little town. Mary Lopresti was one of them. Like, I found people that own their houses for cash. We're asking a little bit too much.
Right.
So the house is worth 122. They're asking 127. It's been on the market forever. I'm like, I'll give you 127, but sell it to me with no money down, no interest. I'll pay you in full in 3 years. I'll give you $2,000 a month. I'll pay you in 3 years. And all of a sudden I start sweeping up properties that way. Right.
Yeah.
So I start doing these deals with no money down. Right. And I'm like, screw it, but I'm never asking for money again. I felt like, even though I was broke, I felt like it was like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, I was asking you for money and you're like, let's see, son. And I felt like it demeaned me every
time.
I'm like, screw that. And I got like, I'm never the kind of guy that's like cocky on the outside, but I'm cocky on the inside.
Yeah.
I'm like, no problem on the inside. I'm like, screw you. I'm going to do this deal without you. I'm going
to
make money.
I'll prove it to you.
You're going to stick to your stomach when I flip this thing.
The competitiveness that you have.
Yeah, I'm like, you're going to stick to your stomach when I flip this. So I start doing deals, and then all of a sudden, everybody wants to give me money.
Right.
Oh, man, I see you. Hey, dude, why use your own money? And then I started telling people no, and the more I told people no, the more money
the more
that came
up.
So like, and then when I wanted to raise money, it wasn't like, hey, man, can you borrow my money? Like, this is the deal I'm doing. This is your return. Do you want in or you want me to call the next guy? No. I'm in. Okay.
Right.
Money will be there tomorrow morning? Yeah, okay. And I'd walk out and be like, holy shit. It's like, it's just what everybody says. It's a principle of least interest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I wanted it, I couldn't get it.
Right.
Right? So, banks. Banks don't lend money to the people who need it. And the people who don't need it, they want to give you money all the time.
They'll stand in line trying to give it to those people that don't need it. But when
I get a letter once a week asking me if I want to borrow money.
More money, right? It's an incredible thought process. And I love the idea that you ran with there that said you actually became obsessed with finding another way to go about it. It didn't stop you, or if you didn't have the money or you didn't want to stop chasing it, but you still found a resourcefulness way to go around that problem.
I mean,
right?
What happened in 2000, and I'm jumping ahead here, so reel me in and then come up, but in 2006, 2007, I'm not a rocket scientist, I'm not an economist, but I knew the market was crashing, right? We all knew when realtors and mortgage brokers didn't want to face it, and developers didn't want to face it, right?
Sure.
Because you've got too much invested.
Mm-hmm.
The mortgage brokers and the realtors and real estate agents bought the new Beamer.
Next size up, they bought the new condo and they bought the boat.
Yep.
Developers started building a year prior. They had to get permits, subdivide land. Now they got 50 or 100 units going up. They don't want
they
the
can't
market.
Say it's
so can't. It's just like this. So the whole world say, no, we're good, we're good. So I just took a shot in the dark and I wrote Be a Real Estate Millionaire in 06 and was done in 07. And I wrote Here's How to Be Okay on the Way Down.
Wow.
And it just timing was like it was like serendipitous. Serendipitous. I don't know. I don't know that word. It was serendipity. It just aligned perfectly. And that book went on to sell over 1 million copies. I think it's the only real estate book that's ever sold 1 million copies. But what I taught people is wholesaling, because I have to be honest with you. I'd love to say I've been wholesaling for 22 years. I did wholesale deals back in the day. I didn't even know it was like called a wholesale deal. I found a deal. I couldn't afford it. I locked it up on contract and I sold it to someone else. And I thought I was the most creative person in the world.
Yeah.
And then I started teaching it and I realized other people did. And I just, what I did in 07 with Be a Real Estate Millionaire is I made wholesaling popular. Like if you see all these people you run into, my buddies like Sean Terry and all these guys, like, oh, it's because of that book, that book, that book. It already existed. I didn't invent it. I made it a little better, I think, but I presented it to the world. It's like, okay, I had no money as a kid. I had to go around and knock on 1 million doors. I found a better way to do no money down deals. Yeah. It's called wholesaling. And I wanted to write about it. And it just happened the market crashes. And all my competitors at the time, so if you guys go back then, there was Carlton Sheets on TV.
Yes.
In his infomercial. There was from Florida. Russ Whitney.
Yeah.
Then there was
Ron LeGrand in Florida too. Yeah. You're an old school right here.
And then there was Dynatech.
Yep, Dynatech.
Dynatech. There was all these guys. They're all in business. And we all made up like a $100 million, $150 million industry. Yeah. And I was a little part. I was 5, 6, 7 million, 10 million maybe. Mm. And all of a sudden the market crashes. And all of them were talking about the same thing they talked about before the market crashed. Yeah. And my conversation was, hey man, the market crashed. It's not the same. Banks don't want to give you money. Every house is in foreclosure.
Yeah.
Let me just show you a down market strategy that you don't make as much, but I think you can do really good on the way down.
Boy.
And in from 07 to 09, I went from a $10 million company a year to $100 million a year.
Yeah.
And we took out all the competition. That's Ron LeGrand, Carlton Sheets, Dynatech, all of them disappeared.
Yeah.
We just devoured the whole industry. And I didn't do anything spectacular other than saying, stuff changed. It's scary out there. Don't do that. Don't buy and hold because the market's going down. Don't fix and flip because by the time you're done with it, it's going to be worth less than you have it. But here's this cool thing. There's cash buyers and they want to collect deals.
Right.
So just sell to them.
Yeah.
And it, as crazy and as simple as it sounds, people are like, I see that. Let's do it. And the success we had, the way down, everybody's like ready to die. And my students are like, no, I got this.
It's amazing because I talk about all the time in class. I call it the wave of real estate in the market, right? It's going to go up, down, flat, up, down, flat.
Yep.
And our job is to make sure we're playing the right game at the right time.
And that's it.
Right?
It's always a great time to make money in real estate. But if you're using a up market strategy when the market's screaming straight down, you're doing a disservice to people. You're hurting.
Yep. And it's just about playing the right game at the right time. And it's crazy because that serendipity moment you're talking about was you led into that industry of wholesaling it with very little money or to no money out of your pocket to other cash buyers, which exploded the whole industry, really.
Yeah.
At that time of 06, 07, 08, right, when it really took off there. But it's about playing the right game at the right time. How important do you think in business and in real estate, but also in business, timing is? How critical is the word timing inside of
extremely
business?
Extremely critical.
Yeah.
Extremely critical. Just think about how many people, and I'm sorry if you were one of them, how many people got really hurt bad in 07, 08, and 09, right? So what happens is, right before a market crashes is when the most people are investing. Because you hear your friend made
the hottest thing.
On a flip. This guy made 20 grand. This guy made 100 grand. My buddy made $500,000 on a flip. Okay, I'm going to do it. And the last people to get in are the ones that waited so long that they're right at the cusp.
Right.
Right. So you're using if a market's going down and you spend 200 grand for a house and you take 5 months, 6 months to get it ready and it's worth 180, that's a really tough thing, especially if you borrowed the money for it.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
And the other thing too, if a house is at its peak and it's selling for, 200 grand to rent for $1,000, and then you buy it at two thinking, I'll lose money every month on the cash flow until I can flip it. And all of a sudden it goes from 200 grand to worth 125.
Right.
You got to hold that and lose that. So not that those strategies can't work in any market, obviously, better than anyone, as long as you get it cheap enough. Right.
Right. when you buy it.
But it's when you buy it. But on a straight up market, people make a mistake and they buy a wrong house for too much money, put too much in the rehab, and it takes too long to rehab. But since they took too long to rehab, the market went up and their profit's still there.
Yep.
So it's not kind of important. It's everything.
It's everything.
And we're on the cusp again. We're not far away from the shift. It's
right.
Already shifted in some parts of the country.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Which means
as you know,
as an investor, if you're sitting there watching, that's that where you should really almost be excited for the new opportunity that's coming along.
Right, especially if you're an early adapter, especially if you're smart enough to gain knowledge from someone who's already done it.
There you go.
Hey, the market's shifting. Cool.
Right.
Your friends are going to tell you you're nuts.
Yep.
I'm going to tell you you're the smartest guy or girl in the world, but this is the strategy you're going to use.
Yep.
You're going to target cash buyers who want to collect properties. Listen, in the last down market, I bought over 2,000 houses.
That's crazy.
Single family houses in the last market.
And was it because of the opportunity that had created, right? The market naturally creates opportunities. If you can see ahead of it.
Can I tell you, I bought most of them from wholesalers.
Yeah, wow.
So people made a gazillion bucks.
Other people
sourcing
made money.
Other people made money because I didn't have time to source them myself.
Right.
So they were sourcing me properties.
Wow.
Right? A lot of them were my students.
That's incredible. Talk about one of the points, if we can move on
to the point here.
This is so good. I like you to run with it and play the game with you. But if we talk about keeping money, meaning I find it one of the characteristics that successful people, wealthy people do is they've mastered how to create money, right? We talk about wholesaling and so forth, but they also have mastered how to keep it, meaning not spending everything. They've changed that mindset of principles of how money works, right? Yeah. They're not trying to just make it and to go buy the car. They have a purpose for that money there. Any thoughts on when you've seen in your career, people being able, those that are successful, be able to keep what they've made and keep what they've earned?
Yeah. So again, I always go, I can't help myself but to go upstream a little bit.
And okay.
The people that I see keep it have a different philosophy and they're not playing scared money. So what do I mean by that?
Oh, this is good.
I know there's a lot of my friends who live a life big like this, right? I'm just being honest. We're in 18,000 square foot house right now, right?
Gorgeous.
I have friends that live that way, but if they had one bad month, they lose it all.
Yeah.
And they're always sick to their stomach, and they're always on the edge of losing it. And I don't know how, man. I'd love to say that I read books and I had these mentors, but I realized at a young age that I didn't want to be the person who used to have it. I don't want to be the guy that used to have the house, used to have the jet, used to be successful. And I have this inner fear, this innate fear. So that caused me to always stash some cash away, right? To not live bigger than my means. And I found more reward when I know guys that say, "Hey, man, why don't you spend that money? I got this new Lambo. I got the no. I'm not knocking it. I'm just using that as a silly excuse. But I got this new. I got the new boat. And I know they don't have 3 cents in the bank.
Right.
And I found a way through inner peace. We're going, no, I don't have that. But I got 300 grand in the bank. I got 3 million in the bank. I got 30 million in the bank. Whatever the number is, right? And that's peace. What it did was, it allowed me to make decisions through confidence. And decisions I thought could take me, because if it failed and it took 3 months to get off the ground, I had a little bit stashed away. Where I watched other people have to bring in partners they didn't like. They had to compromise their ethics, compromise their values, be scared because they had to do things to make the money happen now. Like I watch it with sales guys. You get a sales guy that needs to pay his mortgage, he'll say terrible things. He'll be too aggressive. And that's a sales guy. You go to the car lot, you know the guy that needs to pay his mortgage this month because he's forcing you into a car that doesn't make sense.
Right.
Right. But if that guy has lots of money in the bank, he's going to just talk to you like a human. He's going to hear what you need. And if he can't serve you, he'll send you someplace else. Right? And so I saw that. So how do you preserve it? First off, this is going to be, you're going to realize how smart I am when I share this with you. Spend less than you make. Like, it doesn't prove to anybody. You get a car, you get something you can't afford. Friends are impressed for 2 minutes. You like the car for 2 weeks. And it's just a car.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just realize that if you stash a little money away, it's not just the savings. What you could do is put it in a Roth IRA, other great things that you know how to teach and help people go to another level. But even if you didn't get any interest on your money, how would you feel right now? I don't know where you are economically in your life, but how would you feel right now? What decisions would be different in your life if you had 10 grand in the bank, if you had 100 grand in the bank, or if you had a million or 10 million, whatever level you're on in your life? What would you feel like? How would you listen to me right now and listen to us in this? How would you listen differently? What opportunities would you go after? How would you act when you made your first mistake? Would you feel like when there's no money, if one thing goes wrong, you run back to what you know? I'll just stay with this job.
Stay with the job.
You got a little scratch. You go, I made 3 mistakes. I ain't giving up yet. Now, it takes a little bit to get there. That's why you learn strategies to put a little money in the bank. But my suggestion is you start making money in real estate or anything, pretend for the first 6 months that you're not making it.
Yeah.
And stash it away. And it builds this characteristic of how do I save it? I want to be sustainable. I want my kids, like I'm trying to teach my kids, and I'm reading books on how, you know, in today's world, and this is going to tie back to it, in today's world, we leave our kids money. We give them the gift. How many trust fund kids do you know that are thriving? Every trust fund kid I know is a train wreck.
Yep.
They're just waiting for the dates where they get a chunk of cash,
yeah.
Right? In the old days, they used to leave kids opportunities. That's why in Europe, there'd be farmers that would be 13th generation because they taught their kids, this is your opportunity to carry the baton even further. The Kennedys actually did really well with that, right? Is carry the baton. The Hiltons didn't do so well with it,
sure.
Right? Like Paris Hilton compared to John F. Kennedy Jr. before he passed away. Both privileged, both wealthy. One trying to carry the baton, one just, right? So it's the same thing. I believe as you start making money and you stash some away, it changes this perspective of like, oh no, my great-grandchildren are going to be like, man, thank God my great-grandfather Dean gave us this opportunity. Not waiting for their check, but when they want to start a business, they can borrow it from the fund.
Right.
Right? When like things like that. So I might come at it a little less tactical, but I believe if you don't have the right mindset, you could teach them all the tactics in the world. Put some in a Roth, put some in buy and hold real estate, put some where you like diversify your portfolio, bet a little bit on the downside. So if the market crashes, you're protected on the way down. All of those are amazing strategies. People smarter than me figure that out. But if you don't have the right mindset for it, you're gonna be like, oh, I made 100 grand. Damn, I'm getting things. And then you still have that knot in your stomach of feeling like, your confidence is just down. I don't know any better way to explain it. When there's money in the bank, your confidence is up. You make better decisions.
I think this ties back into your previous point of timing of the market, because those that are smart with money right now, that do some deals right now, instead of spending that money on ABC, whatever ABC
is.
Right? Just to have
it. How would you like to have a couple hundred grand when the market crashes
exactly.
again?
That's that smart investor that's looking ahead, understand the opportunity that's coming. Not just the opportunity we're in right now, but that future opportunity. And I go back to your point when you said over 2,000 houses in the down market, that would not have happened if you'd have had a different mindset from the beginning of it.
Yeah,
you'd have been buying
and
spending it.
Of them now.
Yeah.
And I'm blowing out the last 200 because I'm going to stash the cash. And when the
yep.
market turns, I'll do it again.
Do it again. It's crazy understanding that market right there and the opportunity there. I love it, man. That's so important to understand. I think just because you do a deal, make some money, it does not mean go spend it. It means pay attention, get resourcefulness again, like you're talking about, and then wait for that new opportunity and be ahead of the opportunity versus people are always paying catch up to the opportunity, right? So happens so much. And the last point here that I want to talk to you about is the protection side of it. And not so much the details of asset protection, but just understanding how to make sure that when you move it, how important the word structure is inside of real estate in your deals.
Yeah, so I would say this, and this is stuff I learned through developing companies. If someone told me, I'm not saying 20 years ago, 30 years ago, I'm talking 10 years ago, if someone said, what is your SOP for that procedure? I'd be like, my SOP? What's
yeah.
a SOP?
Right? Soap? You leave out an L?
It's like, what's a standing operating procedure? Yeah. I didn't even know what that was, right?
Right.
What's a KPI? Key performance indicator? Like, no, it's just working. But as you evolve and you grow bigger companies, without those terms, you don't have a company, you have a job that's volatile.
Wow, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So what I'd say is in all of it, when you hear the term standing operating procedure, all that really means is a fancy term for saying, when I do this in this sequence, so let's just say I make great peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Right.
Right? Okay. And you say to someone, oh man, you just grab the bread and put peanut butter and jelly on it. Man, it's so good. Right? But if you got hit by a car and no one ever made a peanut butter and jelly, say grab the bread. Like what? Like a standing operating procedure is simply open the bread, lay two pieces of the bread on a plate.
Don't use the butt ends.
Yeah,
the
don't
bread,
use
right?
the butt ends, right? Take the peanut butter. If it's really hard, warm it in the microwave for 30 seconds so it's soft. Spread the peanut butter on one side, spread the jelly on the other side, put the two together, cut it down the middle, put some chips on the side. Anybody in the world would love it.
Yeah.
As simple as that sounds, that's how businesses scale. Mm-hmm. Because what happens a lot of times when you start making money, let's say you start making money, you're doing deals. And then, because I've helped people for this for 20 years, once you start doing deals, you're a deal maker, but then you want to evolve to being in the deal business. So you go from being a solo entrepreneur, making maybe great money, and you want to replicate it and go bigger. There's a new set of skills. Now I have to learn to run a business.
Right.
And once you learn to run that business, it's the same on protecting your money, on saving your money, on doing deals. If you find a way through strategies that you teach or you learn on your own and you go, oh my God, when I put out bandit signs and then I do Facebook ads at the same time or put a post on my Facebook ad and then I do a ringless voicemail push to everybody on this list. When I do that magical combo, if I spend $100, yep, I get at least one deal. Oh my God, it's working every time. So then you take that and make it a standing operating procedure. Put out 22 bandit signs on corners like Walmart and Target. Send this ad on Facebook and do this ringless voicemail. That magical combo gets you a deal that nets you 10 grand. Okay, that's a standing operating procedure. Where that screws up is if it lives here or you teach somebody, you teach 3/4 of that.
Right.
And then it doesn't work. Like, no, it doesn't work. You find out they put out 10 bandit signs on backyards. Right, and
right,
they forgot to do the ringless voice.
backyard,
yeah, in their, you know, on back roads, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The same thing comes with protection. As you start making it and you start acquiring skills and knowledge from people that are smarter, you're teaching other people's teaching. Oh, that's how I build an LLC that if this goes wrong, I'm protected. Oh, that's how I put some money away. And all of a sudden you find a process. You learn it once from someone qualified to teach you.
OPE, it goes back to it again.
Right, and other people's experience. And then you create a standing operating procedure. Every time my bank account has an additional 10 grand in it I don't need, I'm going to swipe it off the top. I did this for years. I did it at 10, I did
wow,
it at 50,
I
did it at
100
grand. Like, I'd say to my team, I can remember for years, I'd say $1 million in my bank account.
Okay.
In my business bank account. Every dollar over this bank account, over $1 million, every single week gets pulled out and put into this account. And there's a process. Some of it went into protection. Some of it went for long-term assets, buying real estate. Some of it went into my IRA. Like, there was just this process. I figured it out once. I created a standing operating procedure. And it's like, we hit a home run, bank account's at 1-3. I'm like, scrape off the 300 grand.
Take the three and there's a process.
And there's a process and there's a system. But here's the part that overwhelms everybody, and I was taught this by one of my mentors, Dan Sullivan. It's when we get overwhelmed, and I'm going to share this with you. This is life-changing for me. When we get overwhelmed on how to make money, how to save money, how to protect money, the reason we're overwhelmed, listen to this, it's going to change your life, is because we're thinking, how the hell do we do this? We're thinking, how?
Okay.
How do I make the first dollar? How do I save the first dollar? How do I protect the first dollar? Damn it. You replace how with one word, your life changes forever. Who?
Who?
Who can teach me to do my first deal?
Wow.
Who can teach me to save the money? Who can teach me to protect the money? Once they teach you once, it's your knowledge. You create a process. I got goosebumps. That's the
secret of life. Dude, I've been in this industry for a long time, and it's always a how-to industry.
How is overwhelming?
But it's not a who industry.
It's how versus who. Successful people know the who. Everybody
wow.
else in the world's trying to do the how.
I talk in class a lot about the power of a network, right? And when your network grows, there's so much you can do because you surround yourself by the right people. Is that the thing? Is that what you're talking about? Like making sure that you have the people around you?
Yes, but I'm lucky. I have some great friends, right?
Right.
Tony Robbins, Brendan Burchard, Richard
Crane.
Like, I have these crazy friends. I can't even believe it. But sometimes your network sucks. Your network is actually, like, the network you might have right now is the one friend telling you you're crazy is the wrong time
for
real estate.
Why you can't do it.
They're telling, and it doesn't mean they're bad people. They think they're protecting you or they don't want you to get ahead subconsciously because then they'll feel worse about themselves, right? So sometimes your network is your anchor, right?
Yeah, sure.
So just analyze it. I'm not saying throw people out, but know some people you need to put Teflon on and not listen to their crap. But network only works if you're surrounded by people doing what you want to do at a higher level.
Okay.
Simple as that.
Sure.
Like,
absolutely.
Like people say, who do you want to hang out? I want to hang around people that would beat me at what it is I want to do.
Yeah.
If you're the smartest person in the room, get out of the chair and go to another room. Like, that's simple as that. Like, if you're not feeling challenged, and what happens sometimes, we get this big fish, little pond syndrome.
Yep.
We're doing good, and the friends we're with, we're making twice as much money, and we're like, I got this. Time to get new friends. Not let them go. You need to find people who challenge
you. Grow it. Grow
right?
the network.
So when I say your network, get people who challenge you, or get into self-education, get in a mastermind, get in a group, get in a course, get in a live training, get in a place where you're challenged, where you're learning from the who's already done it, and you don't have to figure out the how.
Yeah.
The who gives you the how, and then you make it a process.
Right.
Like, I'm not trying to oversimplify it. It all takes work. But learning on your own is stupid, right?
It's stupid.
When
it's like running into a brick wall over and over again. No, you don't need to today.
Yeah. And then once you find who has done it better than you, then you rob it from them and you create a standing operating procedure, just how to make the peanut butter and jelly, and just rinse and repeat And when you find a nuance that's improved, like, oh, I learned from him how to find a deal, what he was missing. You know, somebody see online, what he was missing is at the same time, I retarget people or I do, like, you right. find this one nuance and you bolt it on and all of a sudden you're standing operating procedures better than the one you learned. Yep. But at least you're starting off where they left off.
Yes, instead of in the middle of nowhere.
Right, of course.
You're starting off with actually the procedure of how to do it and then you're bolting on all these
what
new
be
things.
Yes. And you can't, like, I go off on all these tangents, but you can't score a touchdown if you're standing in the sidelines or you're standing in the stand.
Right.
Like, what most of you are doing, and this is going to sound disrespectful, and I don't mean it. Sometimes I like to be disturbing because when you're disturbed, you take action.
Yeah.
But most of us think we want more, but we're actually sitting in the audience with someone else's name on our back. We're wearing a jersey with someone else's name, cheering them on. Screw that. Put your name on the back of your journey. Call down and get on the field. Even if you fail, even if you get beat up, even if you fumble, if you're in the game, you learn how to hold the ball and eventually you score a touchdown.
Yep.
So just start playing your game and learn from somebody, you know, learn from those that are doing it and then take massive action.
Love it, man. If I go to another topic here, because you're crushing it right now with some of this stuff. If I went to a topic on mission, meaning I want to talk about the why of money and wealth and success. People are sitting in the room and understanding. And I still to this day, I use a tool that you created called the seven levels of why.
Game changer.
It is a game changer. And it's like peeling back the onion. And I give it to every class that I'm in. I put it in my workbook, like attached to it, and say, go home tonight. Don't come back unless you first do this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because once you understand that true why, not I want to drive a nice car or that, you understand the why. And you made something a while ago that I thought was so cool, man. When I was 33 years old, I retired my mom and dad. And for me, that was like, it was my why. That's and no awesome. Matter how much I failed, no matter how many times I tried and messed up, it was irrelevant to me. Because it wasn't about me. It wasn't about what I failed or messed up.
Your why is never about you when you dig deep.
Yeah, you know, did. And it's like, because I truly understood that principle that you taught, dude, it revolutionized my life. And it's affected so many people around me because of that thing. I want you to talk about that why and understanding the mission behind it and how powerful that is.
Yeah, I mean, it's really simple. Everybody watching this, whether you're watching at home or you're sitting in a room right now, whatever it is, you're in this seat, you're watching this video for something bigger than you think at this very moment. So I've done this in front of tens of thousands of people. If I say, who in this room is here because you want financial freedom? The whole room will raise their hand.
Sure.
100%. 100 out of 100, 10,000 out of 10,000, 15,000, like, will raise their hand. But what does that really mean? And when you boil it down, why do you want financial freedom? And somebody go, well, you know, I don't want to work so many hours. Or why do you not want to work so many hours? The whole seven levels deep is basically, and I won't do the whole thing right now, but the whole thing is asking the same question, starting with why are you in this room? Why do you want to make more money? You give an answer. I want financial freedom. Asking why to that answer seven times.
Yep.
And there's a part when you ask it seven times, when you get around the fifth, sixth question, it goes from your head to your heart. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you felt it. Like,
oh,
your physiology changes, your goosebumps
yes,
pop
it happens.
Out. Tears come out of your eyes because you go, I want financial freedom. I don't want to work for this stupid boss. I want to wake up when I want to wake up. I want to spend more time with my family. Why? Oh my God, I don't want to be like my dad.
Yes.
And all of a sudden you watch. I got goosebumps
I'm
right
telling,
now. I watch
yeah.
people stop and go, oh my God, I don't want to be like my dad. My dad struggled his whole life and I was sad for him. I never got to spend time
with him. My parents fought a lot over money.
They fought over, right? And then all of a sudden, because I've done this with so many people, I see goosebumps on my face.
Yeah.
Like that why, all of a sudden, if I was asking you this, it's like, I watch you say, and you're only on the sixth time and someone says, I don't want to be like my dad. I said, why don't you want to be like your dad? I'm like, no, I already answered. Like, no, there's two
yeah.
levels. Seven levels.
There's seven.
Seven gets into your heart. And I watch people say, oh my God, my parents fought. And I resented my parents my whole life. I don't want my kids to resent.
Yeah.
Why don't you want your kids to resent? Because I want to die someday knowing I did the best I could. So you're not in the room because you want financial freedom.
Nope.
You're in this room because you don't want to do what your parents do and you want your kids to have all the opportunities you want. Okay, live into that because shit's going to go sideways.
Yep.
People are going to question you. The first deal is going to fall through. And if you go, oh, financial freedom, you go, ah, screw that. I'll go back to the job. But when the first deal falls through and someone screws you over and everything goes wrong and the education doesn't seem to be working, you can either say, oh, no more financial freedom, or you go, no, I'm not letting my kids down.
Yep.
When I die someday, I'm going to give them every tool possible, and I'm not going to do what my parents did. All right, I'm getting through this shit. Give me an obstacle. Give me 20 more obstacles. Mine is that I never want to go backwards. When I was a kid, I wore hand-me-downs. My mom struggled to make 90 bucks a week working three jobs. And like, I never want to be broke again.
Yeah.
That's my why. My second why is that I want my kids to have choices. Not spoiled brats, not entitled little, you know, the world doesn't need any more entitled kids. But I want them to have choices. I want to hand the baton off to them.
Sure.
But my main reason is I want to be in control.
Full control.
That's it. When I was a kid, I moved 20 times by the time I was 19. My parents were married 9 times.
9 times.
Parents all over the place, different stepbrothers. Like, and there was no, safety. There was no control. I feel like I love my parents, but I was at their mercy. Their decisions was what I did. I loved my house in Highland, New York, on a cul-de-sac with my stepdad, Lenny. But one day I came home from school, that was done.
Yeah.
Right? So what I realized for me, it doesn't mean you, I want control. I want to dress the way I want, talk the way I want, train the way I want, teach the way I want. I want to be the parent I want. I'm staying home all summer to be a stay-at-home dad. I work from home, but I want to stay at home. I want to go on vacation when I want to go on vacation. I'm not a control freak, but I don't like rules. Just being honest, I can't stand going any place that's got too many rules. If I go to a live event and it's all these rules, I'll leave. Like, nothing. I'm just going to do it the way I want to freaking do it. And no one's going to tell me, you know how I did that? By cutting checks. Because this is what I want to do when I want to do it. And as much as that might sound a little like control freak-ish, it's not. I just want to do things the way I want to do it. Because I didn't have that control as a kid.
Yeah.
So for me, I will fight. I will run through a brick wall to never go backwards, to give my kids choices, and to be in control of what I do. Nothing. Like,
I just think it's amazing that, and I should say it's amazing, it should be common knowledge, that sitting here, you had no idea I was going to ask you that question, and you immediately knew your three reasons. Like, very clear.
Yeah, because when I have a
clear.
Dude, people think once you get successful, there's no more worries. Worries just get bigger.
Yeah.
I'm, juggling hundreds of people's lives that make a living from what I do right now, that work with me or work on my brands. Hundreds and hundreds of people. I make bigger decisions that are multi-million-dollar decisions. And some of them go sideways. And when there's days where I'm like, why don't I just cash out? I got enough to live for 3 more lifetimes,
yeah.
Right? No, because God put me on this earth to make an impact. That's what I believe at this phase of my life. I'm not saying I'm Mother Teresa and I've known this since I was 12. But I know now I get to change people's lives. It's what I was put here to do. And I'm going to do it to the best of my ability until my last breath. I will be on stage. I'll be on camera. I'll be doing this. I will never retire. Mark my word, it's on camera.
Love
there will never be a retirement party. I will never be at the golf course playing my, third round of 18. That's just not me, right? That's what I was put on this earth to do. So there's zero compromise, but stuff goes sideways. And when it does, and when I have these silly thoughts of like, should I cash out? Should I just end this? I go, no, because for me, I don't want to go backwards. I want my kids to have choices. I want to be in control, right? And now if I add another layer to that, the truth is my why has evolved in the last probably 3 years more than ever, is I want to make an impact. I want to make a massive impact, like a wave. Like my buddy Tony Robbins, he's touched so many lives. He's been in this twice as long as me. I'm in 22 years. He's in 41 years, right? Like, I want that impact to continue because I wish more people gave it to me when I was younger, so I want to be there for other people. So... I love it, man.
It's so powerful. And my thought was, it was amazing to me because you immediately knew what they are. And a lot of times when you sit down with people that are getting started, they have no idea. They've never even gone through that process yet.
Yeah.
And I think once they get that process down, those 7 levels that you talk about.
Yeah, then you're going to get the education. You're
it's a natural process.
Resourceful.
Then. Yes.
Why do you think I teach this stuff? Because it gives you that like, oh, hell yes. I mean, I know when you speak to people that are my students, you're always like, oh my God, they're on fire. They know what they want. They're alive. It's not because I'm magical, not because I'm bribing them. I'm just giving them tools to wake them up on the inside and know you deserve more. Know there is another level. It's not for someone else. It's for you. And it's not easy.
No.
But man, when you learn and someone gives you a roadmap, you can go there quicker as long as you can stay on the course.
Last two questions here.
Yeah.
And this is to them personally. What do you see, if you could look back, you're 22 years into this now, looking back to when you were 20, a lot of your students that we talk to are literally 22, 23, 24 years old, man. And they're hungry and they're out there. I remember a kid just last week I was talking to, his name was Jackson. He was 21 years old, still in college, and he sat the front row every day, didn't have a strong family life, and came to me crying on day two, right? But had no money. What would you tell your 20-year-old self with all that you know now?
It's an easy answer, and I'll share it. It's not mine,
okay.
But it's a sentence from Tony Robbins, and I wish someone would have given this to me in my 20s, is we have all the craziness that happens to a lot of us, right? All the situations that are deep, and we all got our past, right? I have my own. But what I realized is in his sentence of life happens for us, not to us. And if you think about that, Jackson.
Okay.
So Jackson, maybe you're dying for another level of life. You wish you could get next level education. Maybe you can't afford it right now. But what if, and every circumstance all of you are going through, what if God, or if you believe in God, I do, but maybe you believe in the universe. What if that was all part of your design to see if you were worthy for another level? What if you had to figure out? Tony Robbins went to his first event with Jim Rohn. Said the gym, he got $40 up to go to the event. Jim Rohn had a $1,200 package. Tony was making like $20 a week, living in a car. And he said to Jim Rohn, he went up to crying to Jim Rohn. He said, dude, I don't have the money for this, Jim. If you give it to me, you give me this education, I'll make all the money. I'll be your best student. I'll give you all the money back. And Jim Rohn went, I'm not your bank, son. If you want this fast, if you want this enough, you'll find the money. And Tony said, I went out and did everything in my power. I went back there 45 days later and handed him that money. Changed Tony's life forever.
Yeah.
I mean, forever.
Forever.
So what I'd say is some of you are facing, while you're watching right now, some really tough times. Way tougher than I've ever experienced. But what if you didn't look at it like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm facing this. What if you looked at like all of that was designed for you right now, as hard as it seems, because it's building some kind of muscle. It's building some kind of resourcefulness. It's allowing you to overcome an obstacle that you learn so much from that you can carry it forward, but you have to decide to carry it forward. Like, there was a million reasons. I don't want to use myself as an example. I don't know why I didn't quit, but I had this tenacity that I didn't want to give up. But I have to tell you, every time I hit an obstacle, like, maybe it's not for me. But I was lucky enough to go, well, I'm still going to go forward. And I know so many people, there's certain levels, like, I couldn't get the education, maybe it's not for me. My wife doesn't support me, maybe it's not for me. My husband's not on board with this. Maybe I'll just fail. No, that's your success tax and you need to pay it because life was designed for you. That is part of your journey. Some of you had a harder journey than the rest of us. I think I had a pretty tough journey, but man, I get to talk to some people and I feel like, thank God for my childhood because of what they went through. But there's still some of the most successful people I know. That is your journey. It's designed for you. You have to overcome those obstacles. And here's the thing. On the other side of one of those obstacles, on the other side of your biggest fear, on the other side of your biggest regret, like, you might go, fear, worry, I got over it. Oh my God, hurdle, challenge, I don't have the money. I found the money, I borrowed it, maybe I should, I got over it. And you might have to jump over 3 or 30. But one of these days, you're going to jump on the other side, and that's the next level of life. That's just how it goes. And most people give up and don't realize there's only one more hurdle away from that next level.
I love the word you use, and I'm going to, if you don't mind, steal it from you in your classes, success tax.
Yeah.
I've never heard that before. And you
got to pay it.
You got to pay it. There's just no way around it.
There's no way.
You got to go. We all have our different stories. We all have our different journeys. And you've got to pay that success.
You got to pay yours.
Yeah, yours. Not someone else's. You got to pay yours. That's a wonderful word. If you don't mind, I'm going to steal it from you.
Steal it away.
And I'm going to use that because so many people want to go around it somehow. They come and say, well, can you give it to me? Well, like you said with Tony, but there's that. You got to pay yours. Yeah. It's your dues. Don't try to go around it. Take it on and pay it. Yeah. I love it, man. Dean, this has been an incredible conversation. I absolutely love it, man. You have once again not only inspired them, but you've inspired me, man, to do more. I love being around you. I love talking to you. I did a little bit of research. If you don't mind, I got you a little bitty gift.
Okay.
That I heard that you love something.
Okay.
That's kind of new. I'm gonna see how good my gift giving skills are here.
Okay.
I did some research, and we're gonna see how good I am at this.
Okay.
I love you, and it's been for me just in the background watching all
dude,
of this.
That's really,
I wanted to give you something. And I'll show you this out right here. It's all I could do is fit it in the box.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I heard that you're a big Hamilton.
I am.
Fan.
I just took the kids to Hamilton.
To Sean.
Yeah.
This is the very last gold certificate of that
dude,
dollar bill right
thank
there.
Thank
you
so much. Seriously, and the last few years I've just geeked out on the founding fathers and what they went through and what underdogs they were and the challenges. Like, it gave me a level of gratitude for living in this country. It gave me a level of gratitude that people fought for me who didn't know me. And it showed me what resourcefulness is all about. You look at Alexander Hamilton, you look at George Washington. George Washington's in New York City with 7,000 troops from 16 to 60 with no bullets, half of them with no shoes. And the king sends over the British army and the British navy, 32,000 troops. 10,000 of them are hired guns, Hessians from Germany. They'd rather kill you than take you as a prisoner.
Yeah.
The best army and navy in the world comes against a ragtag army and kicks their ass, for lack of a better word, takes Brooklyn, takes Long Island, takes New York City, like tatters them, and then says, There's 5,000 left of George Washington's troops, and says to him, says to the troops, sends out leaflets and says, for the rest of you troops, if you come over to our side, we'll give you money, we'll pardon you, you're all good. Another 2,000 bail, and George Washington escapes and he's running through Jersey trying not to get killed. If you don't know history, you go, end, it's over. And you got 32,000 of the best army chasing down 4,500 people. But his resourcefulness, taking an underdog disadvantage, making it an advantage, his will, his passion, his mission to create a, I mean, if he lost, they would behead him. It wasn't like you lost, I lost a few money.
For him,
he lost,
no.
You're dead, right?
Yep.
And it just inspires me in a whole other way. So, and Alexander Hamilton's story is amazing. So thank you.
I love it, man.
This is a great gift.
You've inspired so many people, man. So this is a little small token of my appreciation for you, man. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, man.
Can I get a photo with you with this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Adam, you good? Photo with this right here. You write it on there. I'll take a photo with you here. Money is... Oh, man. No one's used this word before. I love it, man. Thank you so much. Put this away. Let me get a photo with you on it. This is just for me personally right here. Thank you, Dean.
All right, man.
Man,
appreciate it.
Appreciate you so much.